Hello and welcome to this Manchester United themed episode of your Sports Memo podcast. My name is Calvin Emekamuka and it is my privilege to have you join us in this episode. Like I said at the start, it's a Manchester United themed episode and I have the privilege of quite a number of United fans from across the globe, actually, who are in the pod with me for this episode. I will get to them shortly. In the summer of 2022, Erik ten Hag joined Manchester United from Ajax Amsterdam, where he had won a few Eredivisie titles and had reached the semi-finals of the Champions League. United finished the 2022-2023 season in third place and won the Carabao League Cup. They also lost the FA Cup final to eventual treble winners Manchester City. I would always own up to the fact that I've been told this many times that I was desperate for United to hire Erik ten Hag. And I would never hide that yes, I was desperate for him to join the football club. In that last season, what struck me was how many defeats the team suffered, 9 in all in the Premier League, and that left me scratching my head. Anyway, to get into this season and think about and talk about what we might expect for the next season, especially with the new ownership in place. From in Lagos, Nigeria, there is Bola, who is a regular here. Bayo, I think this is Bayo's first time, or is it his second time? There's Bayo and there's Eze. There's three of them in Lagos. In Nairobi is Paul Pogba's biggest fan, Vic. Vic has found a way to make time to join us here. And Yomi, I don't know where Yomi's in Amsterdam or he's here in the UK. Yomi is also here with us. And in the UK with me is Dr. IJ, the Queen, the Red Diva.
Yeah.
So, lady and gentlemen, welcome to your Sports Memo podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Thank you very, very much. Very, very Man United. Excellent. And the Reds go Man United.
Where do I start? I'll start with the lady. I am going to start with the lady. Taiji, last season, when we have to admit that we were basking in the fact that after the ruinous part-time of Ralf Rangnick, that it looked like the ship has been steadied. The Carabao Cup win, we were all happy with that, and finishing third, we were all happy with that. But did you see how this season has panned out? Did you see that coming?
To be honest, the story of Man United is a very, very confusing one. Like you've just said, last season was positive in many ways. It's a squad he inherited, so he didn't, have time to like pick his own kind of players or whatever, but he made the most with what he had, and the product we got towards the end of the season gave signs of hope for the next season, where he would have an off season where he would bring in his own kind of players that fit his philosophy or whatever football kind of brand of football he wanted to play. And first thing he did, I'm still going to be pissed about this till the end of time. I don't know how the David thing played out or panned out. Did he stall on terms of the contract or whatever? But the way he left United, I'm not happy with. I remember on Twitter, the discourse was always about a ball-playing goalkeeper or whatever that would change the face of our football, you know, make it spectacular, make it like what Man City are doing or Liverpool is doing or whatever. And then he had the opportunity to sign players. I know we were like on the brink of financial fair play or whatever, but he still spent good money. And his first signing was Mason Mount, which I can never understand. First, because Mount already had an injury-plagued season at Chelsea. He wasn't like regular throughout the whole season. So that was that undertone or that story was already there. And that signing, I don't understand. I like the Højlund signing because he's young. You can see that the fire in him. You can see the kind of skills that he have or has or the talent that he has. And he's a young player who has many years to come to his own. Amrabat, thankfully, is just a loan. So that can be rectified easily. So I've talked about the Onana situation versus De Gea situation. But this season, the most disappointing thing is there is no identity. I know we've had injuries, we've been plagued with injuries. A lot of other teams have also been plagued with injuries as well. But if, even when you watch like lower league teams, maybe play the FA Cup or the League Cup, you can see how they play. You can tell that this is whatever style of football they're playing, you know that. And they'll keep playing that brand of football. But our team is, the games we've won, I don't know how we've won them.
Vic. Again, I really appreciate the fact that you're able to join here. You know, we all used to banter on X. We all banter on X, and we talk sometimes on X about the football club. But did you in any way? Let me even take you back. Are you shocked by how this season has been? And what do you think is responsible for that? Vic, you have to unmute yourself. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. Am I really audible now?
Yes, you're very well. Speak.
There's some kind of background noise around me, but I think you'll excuse me for a minute. I wouldn't really say that I'm not disappointed, but at the same time, I think I would be in a position to understand how and why it has turned out the way it has turned out. Because while I may have issues with a coach, it really is not possible to underestimate other effects that have come into play, you know. Do I like the coach? Of course, I really do. But now, looking at the bigger picture, going back to last season, one of the biggest issues that have crippled United for a long time is our recruitment. When you look at the recruitments that we made last year, starting in the big money one in Casemiro, the primary target in that position was Frankie.
Was who?
But when it was Frankie De Jong.
Oh, Frankie. Right. Okay.
Yes. But when it was clear that we would not get him, we went for Casemiro, which is a totally different profile.
Yes.
From the one that Eric initially wanted. After the season started, we hadn't yet signed a right winger. So, and according to reports that came out, I think there were reports that Anthony was valued, I think, by the scouting at 25 million and things like that. So after we suffered the two defeats against Brighton and Brentford, we got into a panic mode and ended up spending 100 million for a pretty average footballer. So that's just to highlight the issues that we have had with recruitment. And again, going back into January when Ronaldo left, we really couldn't get a striker in, you know. So, I feel until we get to a point where we can get the recruitment right, we can get player selection right, I think we are yet to make the right steps. And credit to Sir Jim, he said that the environment under which the managers have been working has really not been conducive for them to succeed, of which I really do agree. That's not to mean that Eric is not responsible for some of the mistakes that he has really made. But I feel some of the big problems that not only Eric, but the other previous coaches that we have had in the past that have encountered, is that we haven't really been able to nail on the recruitment right. And eventually, we end up making some knee-jerk reaction and purchases that really do not work out. For example, we spent, I think, almost £70 million on Casemiro. I mean, as we stand right now, the guy needs replacing.
Yep.
It's barely been 2 years, you know. He's been on and off, injured. Discipline has been a bit poor. So I feel like until we get that aspect right, regardless of whom we bring, we can bring even the best coach in the world. But if we really don't get the recruitment right, we won't really make any progress. Now, that said, from where I stand, I'm willing to give Eric one more season, especially given the incoming changes that Sir Jim is trying to make with regard to recruitment and getting the right guys in. So, if he's willing to accept the role, the change in role from our all-powerful manager to a head coach and remain, then I'm willing to give him all the time, because I mean, I think the guy is a brilliant coach. I mean, we saw what he did at Ajax. So that's how I stand at the moment. Yes.
I've watched this sport for too long for me to what's it called? To begin to accept this narrative that the main problem has been the issue of recruitment. I look at the footballers at Manchester United. I look at the footballers available that were available to Eric Ten Hag before he arrived, and then I look at the people that he went to buy. This is not. I'm not going to have it that we're going to blame recruitment on anybody else. Eric Ten Hag came and Casemiro apart. He went and got Lisandro Martinez. He got Tyron Malacia. He got Anthony. And then eventually he's now coming with Onana, Amrabat and all of this. You can't spend all of that money. As somebody once said on X, if I gave you money to buy a player and you went and spent over 80 million to buy Anthony, I won't give you another dime to buy a player. So where do you stand on recruitment and the manager's role at a football club at the moment?
No, I agree with you that he can't be absolved from the recruitment issue. So there is a recruitment issue for me. I fully agree with that. But I think he has a large part of the blame, because again, if you look at the players that have come in, he's gone to places where he was comfortable.
Exactly.
He
knew Anthony. Exactly.
And so obviously he had a big say in bringing those guys in. But I've always said, and I think you may remember that we've had this discussion before, that I think there's also a structural issue that I'm hoping that Ratcliffe and his guys will solve for now. Because we kept, when we left Sir Alex and then we had, you know, we had some other managers come in. I think by the time we started going the European route, and especially by the time we got to Eric, I think it was clear that we needed to have a different structure. European coaches are not used to having that all-powerful, I'm doing everything. You have a proper director of football. You have a proper infrastructure that is put in place to look through all of this, to look through your team structure. So you as a coach will talk about your team ethos and what you want to, how you want to play, what kind of players. These guys obviously to go and, you know, scouting, making sure they bring you different choices, you know, challenge a bit and have a conversation. As far as I'm concerned, there's literally nobody doing that for him, and we allowed him step into an SAF type of role, and you see it. You see it in terms of, number one, the players he inherited, he hasn't made big decisions except for the hair one. There are things that when I look at the squad today, they're gaping holes. If you look at, and it shows in how we play, we can't score goals. We have a United team that has only scored 39 goals.
Yeah, but you mean, how is that not a coaching issue?
No, I agree. It is partly a coaching issue, but it is also a personnel issue. I think because he has inherited players and he hasn't been able to fit them into a way that can deliver the output. And so for me, yes, absolutely. Like, he cannot be absorbed. There's a coaching issue. But there's a part to play where you need to hold certain players accountable. He has not held Bruno Fernandes accountable. He has not held Marcus Rashford accountable. Fernandes just does whatever he wants. And for me, that is unforgivable from a coaching standpoint. So I fully agree with you. Yes, there are things that Ten Hag should have done if he truly wants this team to play in a way that is progressive and can deliver what needs to be done. But he hasn't done that. So he's still hanging on to certain players because they are big in the dressing room. And then the ones that he has brought on have not delivered. And so he's caught in between that place. I think the structure needs to be changed. There needs to be a proper... I mean, when we look at the success that the two most successful coaches in the Premier League have had in recent times, Guardiola, you need to look at the infrastructure around them. Look at what was done to make sure that they excel in what they're good at. You know, setting up their team, making sure that they have a clearly defined way of playing. I think IJ was spot on. Identity is a big gap for us. We don't know how United is going to show up.
You mean, just hold on. This is Bola, I need you to come in here. This is my problem. Every time we're talking about United in the last 18 months, what I find, a narrative that I find, is it standby and bio. The narrative I find, which absolutely wearies me, is where we without even deliberately setting out to do it, we find that we're making excuses for what is happening on the pitch. These were the things that drove me mad in his first season. We go to Newcastle. We go to Anfield. By the way, I believe that 7-0 defeat at Anfield should have cost him his job that night. It's an unforgivable thing. It's unforgivable. A Manchester United team should not lose 7-0 to Liverpool. It's not acceptable. Anyway, we go to all those places. We go to the Etihad. Lost 6-3. That 6-3 flattered us. It was 6-1 at some point. So I'm thinking, this guy, you cannot be setting a team up in this without having respect to the opposition. When you go into all those places, we used to go to those places with a midfield trio that included Eriksen. So, Bola, my question for you, where I would like you to come in, that do you buy this idea that everything first is down to recruitment? Are you interested in what goes on above, or are you like me, more interested in what we're seeing on the pitch?
Thank you, Emeka. Well, without a doubt, which you probably already know, the fact that I'm more interested in what goes on the pitch. I wouldn't say that what goes on above doesn't have an effect, but I think the effect, as far as I'm concerned, from where I stand, is very minimal. And with regards to Ten Hag, for me, pre-season, last season, before a ball was kicked, I was already the solution because of the decisions that he had made. One was the fact that I thought, how could a man have been chosen for United? I can't remember, but maybe he was announced like March or something.
Yes, it was around March, sure March 2002, I think it was announced.
Yes, and before he was announced, I mean, conversations were ongoing, so he knew that he was coming to United. So I thought, how did this man come to United and was taking all his striking hopes on Anthony Martial? That for me was already a red flag. Is it that he hasn't watched United? He hasn't gone back and checked the players, checked Anthony's attitude, and most especially his injury record? That for me, when he started to say during preseason that, oh yes, Martial is this, Martial is a fan, I'm like, you know, I told you then, I was like, what's this gentleman saying? He wants to go into a season with Martial as his only striker. As much as I hate to say, because I'm a United fan, obviously I was proven I'm right. Secondly was Anthony. I would mention the other United player in the past, because this is not about people who have gone in the past. I'd watched Ajax for two seasons in the Champions League and all. For the life of me, I couldn't even remember that I noticed an Anthony on the pitch. Then we go and spend over 80 million on the guy when we had no striker. We needed a midfielder and the likes. So for me, already as the season started, I was like, okay, this gentleman doesn't know what he's doing. And it showed over time. Even when you look at the players that brought on loan, he sanctioned, he didn't even give Ghana a chance, sanctioned Ghana to leave, to bring in Sabitzer in January. And every time I watch Everton play, I'm looking at Ghana, I'm like, okay, yes, it might not be the best footballer in the world, but he would have obviously been a very good squad player for us. He would have given us much more than we got from Sabitzer. And then you had a whole season where my man was fouled, played practically every match. And I kept on shouting either that, look, no matter what, Elanga will give me better than this guy. And you can see what Elanga is doing today, this season, and not at Forest. So for me, I honestly do not excuse him or absolve him of anything.
Yeah, this season, he has made some weird decisions.
This season, he's done the same thing. He's done the same thing this season. I kept on telling people, what's this thing about a keeper who can play out of the back is the reason why you won't concede? You don't concede because 10 outfit players are doing their work on the pitch, not because the player, a keeper, can kick the ball like Xavi or pass like Xavi. We had the second best defense, joint second best with Arsenal last season. We couldn't score. That was why we didn't challenge and didn't win anything. It was obvious that our problem was scoring. Then you go this season, I have nothing against the young man, but you then go and pick a 20-year-old and stake all your striking hopes on him again. Went for that 72 or less with that Port Watkins. There were players crying to be bought. So for me, his own recruitment, the players that he sanctioned, which obviously no one can say he's not the one that sanctioned them, have actually cost him and cost us. And then he makes all sorts of decisions on the pitch. You know what? A lot of people don't realize that last season, nearly every single bad defeat, either in terms of performance or score line, he always removed Martinez, because Martinez was actually a big clog in the defense in all those matches. You know, the funny thing is that everybody says the butcher, he will kill people, he will do that. And I do not fault his enthusiasm on the pitch. But you go check again last season, every single bad performance or walloping, he removed Martinez before the game was over, because even he could see what was happening. And these were the players that he staked his reputation on. So I really don't understand how he's been given the part.
Right. Izzy, you know what gets to me? When you watch Manchester United, then you watch Manchester United play, right? Tactically, you see every team in the league. You see the defense push high up. You push high up when you are attacking so that you can squeeze the play, right? But when you watch Manchester United, there is a chasm between the defenders and the midfield, such that every time, all it takes are one, two, or three passes, and boom, they're into onto our defense. And I look at this thing happened all of last season. This thing is happening this season. I find it extraordinary that there has been no change from last season into this season. Have you found any changes? Is it?
Hello, everyone. I've been thinking of this statement for a while, and there's quite a difference with how we played last season and this season. Really, the difference is quite clear. In that, our midfielders are expected to join the attack as quick as the ball launches to the wingers.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, I think Ten Hag, at the end of this last season, he had this idea how he wanted his team to be. And he said it in some of his pressers that he emulates Klopp's Liverpool. And we need to know Klopp's Liverpool, the midfield, they are all runners.
Mm.
If you're not a runner, you will never get to Klopp's midfield. He needs you to walk like James Milner does in the midfield. Like, you be a walker, so to speak. But from history, with this current team and the kind of midfielders we've had that he inherited, they are not walkers. The only guy, I think the fittest guy in our midfield is probably Bruno Fernandes. He's the only guy that can give you a month of football in the midfield. And next to him should be McTominay. I don't know if I'm wrong. Those are the two fittest we have in the team. So they are not walkers. For him to like want to play that style of football, I think he has a wrong profile of midfielders. He got Mason Mount, and his profiling of Mason Mount is a guy that can live during transition. And that is quite a good description for Mason Mount. He's not a guy that you say sit in the midfield, control play. He's the guy that likes chaos football. Like, he's coming from defense and you are switching to attack. Now, as you quite said, there's a chasm between the midfield and the defense, in that when you are playing that kind of football and your midfielders are meant to join the attack with being energetic and running, you need your defenders to step into that space.
Everybody, they've got to step up
and occupy it, forming a line. You use the tactics of football, keeping the offside trap in case the ball springs behind.
Mm.
But our defense are not comfortable stepping up that way. They are not. And when we go on such an attack and you find that we lose the ball, just a split ball, a vertical ball.
That's it.
You will just see the gaping gap between the midfield and the defense. Every time, it started from the first game against us, and we're like, why are these guys running through our midfield like
this?
Thank
you. Thank you, Izzy. It was that opening game.
What has happened? But it's a recurring theme during this season. But it's simple tactical football. When you move, when your line of midfield moves and you're playing that for high up the pitch,
mm-hmm.
the defense is supposed to occupy that line. If they beat you with the offside trap, that's football. It happens in the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. They step up. If you play the ball behind, it's football. You have to reorganize and play from there. That's what happened. That was happening. What you see, our defense, they are not committed to that kind of football. No. The manager is not going to.
No, him no, 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 no. No, is it? I refuse. I disagree completely. Because that thing is not an accident, because it does not happen in just one game, that is why
I'm not saying I think I called the coach for still going on with that style of football. He's been so strong-headed, still going on with that kind of play when he knows he doesn't have the midfield and he doesn't have the defense for that kind of football. He's meant to like revert back. Still worked for him the last season and built from there.
But
most of the games I've seen, we've been bettered by playing, losing our midfield. Transition when we go on attack and we lose the ball, it's almost like we are dead.
Yes,
so for that, for not going back to what works, we don't have the midfield. Casemiro, in fact, we've been done in the market every time we go for a midfielder. Check, look it up. The only successful midfielder we've ever gotten was Bruno Fernandes. We've been done totally by everything once we go in for a midfielder.
Okay,
I will be in the football club.
I one day I went in search of my tweets, and I remember I made a tweet in 2019 where I said that if Sir Alex was still the manager of Manchester United, that summer United would have signed Declan Rice. That summer, I used to tell my West Ham supporting friends that we are coming to get Declan Rice. That there was it was a no-brainer. He was the one person that United needed. Right. So I'm seeing what Rice is doing at Arsenal, and seeing us struggle with. You see, every time I see Casemiro dive into tackles, I smile. I smile. I do. The reason why I smile is I know that the guy physically can't cope with the intensity of the Premier League, and it's not his fault. He's doing what he can do, and I think he's a really, really fantastic footballer. It's not his fault. But we have not tactically, the team has not season and a half of Erik ten Hag, I haven't seen anything to make me think that he should be given another season, as Vic says. But
I think I disagree with that.
Is it wait? Let Bayo call me, please.
Okay, so good evening, everybody, and so everybody's a little everybody's all about Erik ten Hag and all of it, but let me just keep it in. Let me start with a light note. Where did you find supporters for Noisy Neighbor for your podcast previously? Where on earth did you find them? I don't think that's enough.
They follow me on X, so
they follow you.
Yes,
it's only you that can find people like that in the world. How can you support Manchester City? Anyway, so
Bayo, change your location.
Can you hear me?
Change your location. Your voice is dragging. Is dragging. Change.
Oh, really?
Yes. Change your location and let's try again. In the meantime, Dr. IJ.
I'm here.
Yeah, go on. What do you think? I you people are making excuses.
I'm firmly in the same. I remember when like our performances started being like suspect.
Mm.
And you started tweeting tweeting or posting on X. I've not started calling it X. I can't. It's difficult for me. But when you started posting on X that Ten Hag out, I think I asked you. I replied. I said, boss, are you there already or something? And you said yes. So, and then I was still believing that stuff could change. But I cannot for the life of me justify giving Ten Hag any more money to spend, because what he has shown that he doesn't know what he wants to do, and he doesn't know what he's doing, and he has not shown any adaptability the whole season. How can Man United go look, just
take a screenshot of the table.
I have it.
Our goal difference is zero, minus two, minus five. It's ridiculous. I cannot, for me, I'm firmly Ten Hag out. I don't know who we're going to get in. I don't know what happens after, but I have lost confidence in him. So he has my vote of no confidence.
All right, Bayo, you're back. Go ahead. I hope you're a better place now.
Yes, I am. I hope this is better.
Yes,
for everyone.
It's much better.
Okay, so let me start with what Doctor just said, IJ, and it's very important. And I'm going to just buck the trend. I'm not going to buck the trend. Actually, I'm just going to go against it. I'm going to say no, Ten Hag not out yet. And I'll just very quickly say what it is. Everything that you guys have come up with, they are very, very valid. But there's one thing that I like to do when things like this happen. I like to listen very carefully to the people in charge. And I'm listening to him quite a bit. What happens every time is that you consistently think that, does this man know what he's talking about if he talks about a game that you've just watched? But you know what? I find quite a lot of sense in the things that he says. And there are many things that we're not taking.
Give an example. Give one.
Okay. So you finish a game, and he says this guy's played well, and you're thinking, are you crazy? Is this are you talking about this same match? But behind all of that, there's something that he says: players taking responsibility. Players taking responsibility. At every point in time, it's 11 against 11.
Mm.
Now, there's something that's also very important, and this is his own part of it. I think he does not respect teams enough, all the teams in the Premier League. I think he's quite disrespectful of some of those teams. He's coming from a league where there's a big gap between the top teams and the other ones coming along with them.
Mm.
And he's coming with that kind of mentality. Okay, I really have to be, I can ignore whatever tactics my opponent are bringing because I have superior players and they can get the job done. In the Premier League, you don't have that. The gap between the teams is not a big deal anymore. There are top quality players all around in practically everything. I mean, probably with the exception of maybe three or four teams in the Premier League.
Mm.
You have players who would play in what we call the Big Six easily. Not even Big Six anymore, it's probably Big Seven or Big Eight now. And that's how it just shows you what's going on. It's a much bigger field now. Mm. You understand?
Mm.
So and that, it's a big deal. And what we see every time, you can talk about recruitment and all of those kind of things, but ask yourself, how can you be playing in a team and people can't do 5-yard passes? Are you okay? You are a player that gets paid a crazy amount of money, even if the coach sets you up in a stupid manner. Does that mean that you should fluff your lines every time? It's unbelievable what you see, the kind of performances that you see from the guys every week. And that's why, for me, I just like to hear what the coach has to say about this. You know what? Some of these players, you can't doubt that some of these players are very skillful, they're great. For crying out loud, Antony plays for the Brazilian national team, be it off and on. Anyway, we can say that because Fred also used to play for the Brazilian national
team.
There's a reason why they've not won the World Cup in a very long time. So, you can say all of those kind of things. But come on, Rashford. And you're looking at the whole team, and the only people we're talking about is the 17-year-old, is the 18-year-old Mainu, is the 19-year-old Garnacho, is the 20-year-old Hoyland. What are we saying now? We have the seasoned professionals there. There are internationals in that team. How can they not string passes together, even if the coach has set you up in a funny manner? And he has set them up in a very funny manner many times. I'm not going to tell you a lie. It baffles me sometimes what exactly he's trying to achieve. But, and this is a very, very big but about it, when you talk about him getting money and all of that, the jury is still completely out about giving him money. I don't think the jury should be out there anymore. Somebody should be in charge of recruitment for that man, you know? And just
when you talk about an identity, very honestly, I think we're a little, as Manchester United fans, I think we're just a little spoiled. We've had many years of soccer that we can't think about. I'll tell you why I think.
I can't have that. Let me tell you why I can't have that. I used to.
We're sixth in the league.
Wait. I used to think this before, until I started observing Real Madrid closely. There is a reason Real Madrid are the way Real Madrid are. At a football club like Real Madrid, at football clubs like Bayern Munich, there is no room for you to say you can't get more than one season. You can't. No manager gets more than one season without
a
bigger.
Then if you say that, then you have to go. Then you have to go to the structure that Alexander was talking about earlier on. Then you have to go to the structure, because that structure enables and allows mediocrity. It's so obvious. How can Anthony Martial still be in Manchester United after 9 years? That guy should have been thrown out after 3 years. Do you understand? Yes. How did you have with Jesse Lingard and so many of those people being around for such a long time without doing anything? It doesn't make any kind of sense. If you want to go that route, then you are going to absolve Erik ten Hag of some of the things that we're seeing. And don't get me wrong, he's done quite well with many issues that have to do with Manchester United. Manchester United is a big team. There's a lot of drama that comes with it. Even Real Madrid probably don't have as much scrutiny from the Spanish press like the way the British press hound on anything that goes with Manchester United. Manchester United sells news. Therefore, to create chaos, whether it exists or not, is a big deal for them. And I don't blame them. They want to sell their newspapers and all of those kind of things. But what we get served on the football field, which is my own main concern, does not make any kind of sense at all.
Okay.
To call it confusing is even an understatement. Okay. There's nothing confusing about it. What we do is just rubbish.
Right.
It's absolute rubbish. Nothing else.
One of the things I always enjoy doing is I like to speak to footballers, current and ex-footballers, right? And I ask them questions to understand, to hear how they interpret some of these things. And one of the reasons why I love the overlap that Gary Neville hosts is that they speak off the cuff and they tell you some of the things that players that happen with players during the season and all of that. Now, when you set players out onto the pitch, right, and they are behaving like children on the pitch, what I always ask myself, what were they doing during the week? What have they been doing in training? Why are they not? The biggest thing I had against Solskjaer, the biggest problem I had with Solskjaer was, at the time, some big players were off form. He didn't drop them. He should have made a mega statement and dropped them. Because that, as soon as you do that, right, I tell this story. I think I said to Bola about it. When I heard Rio Ferdinand say that in these early years at United, coincided with Sir Alex kicking out Roy Keane, Rio said that all of them young players at the time were so petrified by that act that they said to themselves, if this guy can be gotten rid so fast, that we all better shape up or he will ship us out also. Now, look at this. Look at the players at United. If these players don't have that worry or that fear, then they won't perform. And for me, I won't blame them. I would always blame the person who chooses them. Do you know what I mean?
I can't agree more. I mean, that was exactly what I was saying earlier, that he hasn't held people accountable. For me, if I was the one running that team, what's his name? Fernandez would have been riding the pine for a while. Or
leave Bruno. Bruno. Bruno is our special player.
Bruno has to go or play better.
Oh, no.
He's the central issue in United. And because he is not playing well, and because he is not disciplined, the others, exactly what Calvin just said, the others are not worried.
and there's a total lack of discipline in that team. Don't even get me started on Marcus Rashford. For you to put your stamp on a team, they need to know that they are not safe. Bruno is too comfortable. Rashford is too comfortable. And what that means is that they know that they are the first names on the team sheet, and then everybody else just shows up. They will try. I think it was Bayo that was calling out Mainoo. He's like my savior in that United today now. He's like, when I think of United today, he's the first person that comes to my mind. The energy, the drive, the willingness. Garnacho, but you see, look at how Garnacho is playing. He's skillful, he's hungry, but you don't see that that step forward in development in terms of the game understanding and that intelligence needs to build. It's not coming through. Why? Because there's no discipline in the team. The leaders in the team are some of
good point. The
worst players in the team. When you even go all the way back to Maguire and all those kinds of guys. So then think back to how we used to play in the past. You can't have you would never have had this kind of scenario. And so that's one of my biggest issues with Ten Hag. I'm not at Ten Hag out. Why? Because I still believe that the dysfunction that has been at United for a while allowed him to get away with some of the nonsense that he's done. I think he's on the hot seat right now. I think Ineos will hold him accountable. Mm-hmm. I think they will do the right thing by putting the right structure and give him one more season. I don't think they'll give him free hand to just be throwing money away the way he was doing. There needs to be a structured way to recruitment and to spending money. Then let's see what he does. Because we can see in certain, you know, we can look at his league record and say it's crap. I am mortified by the idea that we've played 28 games and we can only score 39 goals. But then you look at top games and then you see him pull the rabbit out of the hat. You see something happening there. So I'm like, okay, let's hold this guy's feet to the fire. Let's put some structure around him. Let's see what he does again in this coming season. But there needs to be a shake-up of that team. There needs to be better recruitment. United needs to be back in that place where we can, where we expect the best of the best to at least look our way. Today, nobody's looking our way. We're shopping for strikers and we're ending up with Højlund.
Mm.
We're shopping for midfielders, we're ending up with Mount. we've regressed and we're not. It's like we haven't noticed Jigger, and we need to get that feeling back. But that means that the guy in that coaching seat needs to understand what this job truly means, and the structure that needs to be put around him to enable him succeed also has to hold him accountable, and most importantly, he has to hold accountable the guys who are supposed to be the leaders in the team, who are just not up to par. I'm sorry. I keep saying it. Bruno, I was a big fan for his first 2 years. I'm sorry, the last 2 years have been.
Vic, I'm sure you're chomping at the bit to take a pop at Bruno Fernandes. Have at it.
Absolutely. Now that you've brought the issue about personnel and all that, I believe now we can now look microscopically the issues that are actually plaguing us. I was having a conversation with one of the guys in X, and I actually told him this: none of our midfielders, apart from Kobe, would really start for the top three teams. Bruno wouldn't start for Spurs, Arsenal, City or Liverpool. Casemiro wouldn't. Neither would McTominay. These guys actually would struggle to even get into Aston Villa team right now. And you have to go all the way, like the whole 25-man squad. There are a lot of issues. For example, our best three midfield, that is Kobe, Casemiro, and Bruno. Only one midfielder there is comfortable in possession. The other three guys, Casemiro, McTominay, and Bruno, those guys can't think beyond an action. And all they do is treat the ball like a time bomb. Like, how are we really going to compete at the top with such characters?
I think there was a meme last or next of a small guy leading a whole bunch of big guys from the front. And it quite exemplifies the issues we have in our midfield. Kobe literally dragged that midfield on his own. He's the only guy who can keep the ball. He's the only guy who can actually pass the ball comfortably. And he's the only guy who is mature enough. So I believe until we address personnel issues, because look at our center backs. I think somebody, I think you made a point about our center backs not pushing high. Well,
yep.
apart from Lisandro, apart from Martinez, who else can push high? Maguire cannot push high because he lacks the pace. Varane cannot push high because his body will fail him. So all they do when they are faced with such scenarios is that they tend to take the safer bet of retreating back, running back towards the goal. And that's why you find that we leave such a big gap between the defense and midfield. Compare that to when Ten Hag was back in. I think somebody meant that comparison of how teams would react when they are faced with such situations. Is defense always pushed high? But that's not the case with our defense, because we don't have the characters to actually implement what we want to see. We can't have, our centre backs cannot push high. So besides Lisandro, whom I believe is, and compare our general play in possession when he's on the pitch and when he's not on the pitch. He can play whichever pass you want, and he's very aggressive. He's not afraid to step in maybe because he's physical enough and he has the pace that you need to do that, you know. Unlike the other center backs, that's not to say that they don't have their strengths as well.
Mm.
But when you look from a team perspective,
yes,
they can't really bring to the table what the team demands. Our center backs cannot push high when we need them to. Our midfielders cannot pass or keep the ball. That's why I think Bruno made an interesting comment while he was in away with Portugal. He said that we shouldn't expect to play a possession-based football. I mean, this is your captain who is saying that.
But he himself, why must you play possession-based football? Izzy Steinsen was saying something earlier about the way Liverpool plays under Klopp. Initially, the team that won the title, the Liverpool team that won the title and won the Champions League, wasn't based on possession football. They were based on high octane, high game pressing football. So,
If we cannot get from the leader, I mean, how do we really even expect the others to follow?
Vic, you didn't hear me. You shut down.
Yes.
I was saying you didn't hear me. I am saying,
yes,
do we have to play quote-unquote possession-based football? That's what I'm saying. Liverpool won the title and won Champions League not playing possession-based football. They played high-octane, pressing football. They don't have... That's what I'm saying is... If you don't have players to play this particular way, must you insist on trying to shoehorn them into playing that way? Is that not probably why we're having so much difficulties?
Well, I do think, well, if why that's a good point, but at the same time, the reason as to why we are being forced to do that is because the moment you try to extract something more from the players, they always crumble under pressure. I mean, I'm not saying that we play like Man City. That's not what I'm saying. Mm. All I'm saying is that get competent footballers who are comfortable with the ball. It's not all the time that you have to kick away the ball to high up the pitch. I mean, that's what almost every midfielder in our team does. Bruno gets the ball, he cannot chill, look at his options. No. He gets the ball, he's booting it either to the right wing, so some guesswork, or to the left. I mean, if we could, and that,
as much as Liverpool didn't play that ultra possession based football, but look at the guys here, very comfortable guys on the ball, guys who can actually think beyond an action and actually make sober decisions with the ball. That's not, we don't have such characters. And to just back what someone said,
Izzy, would you like seems like everybody also thinking that we could give Ten Hag, what would happen for the rest of this season that can give you hope for next season?
Well, and I'm bold enough to say, as long as the guy is still there, I don't expect us to compete at the highest. I mean, Sporting won the league after 20 years, immediately after they sold him and replaced him with a better footballer. Is that a coincidence? Well, I don't know.
Big wait. Let me... Izzy, can you answer that? Can you come in?
Well, to be honest, I'm more like, I'm talking my position regarding Ten Hag. My position is this. I don't expect Ten Hag to work miracles this season or even next. See, I'm just comfortable with watching us grow. We've been changing managers seasons, and this is the second season. Yes, granted, it's not as the ideal way we wanted. There's been a drop. Let's see what next season comes with. But for us to be expectant and start criticizing, yes, it's been a season from hell. But we seem to be disregarding the preseason we had. It was very, very horrendous. Injuries everywhere. Maino, that was supposed to be like the breakout star in midfield this season, he was injured. Injuries, we started the season with injuries. Almost every month, where our players were dropping. It was reminiscent of that Van Gaal season that everybody was dying of. That's how it just began. So for me, I think that I'm contented with not going to the Champions League. We are not that team anymore. We are not that team of Sir Alex Ferguson's days. Some years ago, I made a tweet that we will never win the league till 2025, and it's coming to fruition. The thing is, we have to dig it deep with a coach. Stay with that coach. We have to suffer just like Mourinho. Normally, we'll suffer with the coach. But say, to be honest, expecting after two seasons we'll work wonders and we'll start competing with Guardiola at the club, it won't work. We've tried it. We've been doing chop and changes. It's been how many years now? Almost more than a decade. We are still where we are. You take a Ten Hag, say he finished his no Champions League, he loses the FA Cup semi-finals or the finals. What do we have? Okay, yes, we'll go bring the new guy, the guy that everybody talks about, that the content creator on X that waxing lyrical about. Let's say we bring in the Brighton manager. What's his name now? We bring him in. Now, his first season. Oh, yeah. His first season is okay. The second season, he experienced a downturn. What do we see? We start giving up these excuses and that. There will be anti, there will be pro. Now, we see change him. And do what again? Repeat the same sequence. We have to dig it in. If we say we stay 4 years with a good coach and get rid of... So, there are so many bad eggs in that team. So many players that affect these other younger players coming in. Players, I would say, players like Rashford. Forget his PR. Rashford needs to leave that team. We try to shoehorn him as a center forward, as a right winger, as a left winger. Almost give him any position just for him to be optimal. Yet, he gets some power football from him. He needs to leave. He's 26 going to 27. It's time for him to go to a different club and we get new players. We have body wingers like Diallo, Garnacho coming through. We'll let them play. We just need to stick with Ten Hag, or we sack him at the same cycle. It's just how it is. He's a good coach, regardless of this season. He's a good coach.
But
for me,
I think
who was Mr. Calvin?
Yes.
Getting Hoyle, who was in the market?
Watkins. Say
some people, the Aston Villa striker. What's his name?
Watkins.
He's a good striker. Now, aside Watkins, there's Harry Kane. Harry Kane is in the twilight of his career.
Mm.
For me, Holland is a very, very good striker. Watch him at Atalanta.
Scored 9 Ligos at Atalanta. See, my problem. Let me be very clear. I've got nothing against Hoyland and all of that, and Bola Wood coming from here. I felt that after coming third in the league, after qualifying for the Champions League and losing the FA Cup final, that to take the next step, right, for the football club, that the last thing he needed to do was to go and get anybody who would need time to adapt. You needed to go and look for plug and play players who were ready, who were already in the Premier League. If you needed to break the bank to go and get them, you needed to go and do that and get them. Yes.
When we signed Haaland, I made a tweet. I was laughing. I was like, for Haaland to succeed, he has to be a scrapper. And that's how he has played this season. He's been a scrapper. We are the only team that have wingers that one will be confused if these wingers are strikers. Their primary assignment, I don't know if it's a function of their own programming, is to score instead of providing.
Yeah, but that's, they don't cross. They're not wingers. They're wide forwards.
Don't expect a centre forward such as Haaland to survive. How? When your wingers are not hitting the ball, when they refuse to give you a first time ball, these are the bread and butters of strikers, giving me the ball faster than before the centre back reacts.
So why
giving
you,
me the
why,
ball?
Why are you blaming the wide forwards and not blaming the coach who plays them?
I'm not going to blame the coach because look at how many people.
That's about tactics.
Let me make my point. The only winger that I think is everybody can unanimously agree that it's been a bad buy is Antony. And Antony is not different. I was against Antony. He's not different from what we have. Wingers coming in to midfield, coming to traffic. Wingers who do not cross. Wingers who prefer to go into the box and play. Wingers who prefer to shoot on sight when they cut in instead of going for the 1-2. That was his fault, getting Antony. He was not different from what we have. Look at the pipeline of wingers we've had. Even before Ten Hag, they had the same kind of wingers. Wingers that prefer to cut, not crossing. Garnacho from the youth team is the winger that cuts in. Diallo from Atalanta is a winger that cuts in. Rashford, the worst of all, is a winger that cuts in. Who is actually different? None. He had a chance to buy a different winger, and he bought the winger he felt was his best winger.
So why are you blaming? I still don't get it. Why are you blaming the players? I don't get it. How can you blame the players? After saying all of this that you're saying, how can you blame the players?
The point I'm making is the Haaland point, a striker that you said.
No, so that's my point now. When you buy a player, when you buy a striker like Haaland that thrives on services from wide areas, well, let me take it back. When you have this kind of wide forward that you're describing, right, why then go and buy a striker who thrives on services from wide? Why would you do that? That's on you.
Emeka, you know the thing about this Oiler thing is, and I really try to refrain from speaking about the young man because I understand that the 20-year-old boy would have all this up and down. But the boy before coming to United had played 18 months of top flight football. Where the people, or based on world record, do people even say that he's a player that thrives on wingers? He's played a season and a half of top flight football. Where exactly did everybody see this record that they are using to say that's why he's struggling at United? His movement was poor. From the beginning of the season till the day he scored, his movement was poor.
I disagree.
Okay. Sorry, if I may ask you, where did you get this record that he thrives on wingers? From where? He played a season at Atlanta, played up a season in Austria, and that's all. So where exactly does this record come from? That makes you say that's the way he thrives.
No, he doesn't thrive on that. If you watch him, no, that's not how he plays. He doesn't thrive on service. No, in Atlanta, he was a guy who created his chances by himself. So he's not a bad fit for the United team. Not at all. The way he was playing in Atlanta, that's exactly how he's been playing in United. What has happened is that there's just a drop in quality. From
United
the kinds
Atlanta.
Of things.
Bio, please.
Yes.
Please,
honestly. Yes. Yes. No. I'll tell you what it is.
He had a record like Harry Kane.
He scored only nine.
He didn't have that kind of record.
He only scored nine. Serie A goals.
I think you have to respect the fact that he was the Euro qualifying top scorer. I mean, give the guy his credit. He has a quality.
But we don't really create enough for strikers.
So I
think the Euro qualifying is over. They ask, then why exactly do you guys lampoon Scott? Scott is the man that started the Euro qualifiers as a centre back.
He started
the Euro qualifiers as a centre back 3 games into it. He was moved forward in one game. And only three people, Lewandowski, Harry Kane, and somebody have scored more than him in the qualifiers. So why exactly do you lampoon him?
If we are really to gauge McTominay as a player, we are really not going to use the goals he has scored. We have to gauge.
You're using that for Rasmus. No, I'm asking you, McTominay, who is not even a striker.
It's all about the metric that you use when you are evaluating us. I mean, when you are evaluating a striker, you look at the goals he has called, the numbers and all that, and how they have scored. When you're evaluating,
Rasmus has no numbers. I'm sorry, but stop saying it. He has no numbers. He was the top scorer of the Champions League
at some point.
There's no record that justified what we spent on him. He had no record.
I don't think we should go on about spending. And I'll tell you why I don't think we should go on about spending.
The main issue, let's go into the region of spending.
Why? Because you're not going to get upset about Anthony and all of those kind of things. But I'll tell you very honestly, and something that really pisses people off is we spent 200 million or thereabouts in this last window without improving that team. We have stepped back after spending that much money in the market. That had Mason Mount. It had what's this guy in Spurs?
Leicester.
Let me ask a simple question. If he was to go back in July last year. You are trying to buy a striker and you are buying based on where we are as a team. And the phase we are in the rebuilding stage, and what you have in the market, whom you really buy?
Only Watkins.
I already told you what. I already told you what that we can keep going on. There were 1,000,001 strikers available for over £70 million.
Name them. We should name them.
I wouldn't have picked Watkins over Watkins. I won't have because in that Manchester United team, he would not try.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, let me ask this question. I just want yes or no. All of you, Yomi, everybody. I'm going to ask it now.
Okay.
In the summer, you had the money, you had 80 million to buy a striker for Manchester United. Who would you have bought Haaland? Forget what has happened now. Would you have bought Haaland? Yes or no?
No.
Bayo,
No. And no
for wait, 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 Bola. Ijoma.
I'm here. I'm thinking about it because I like Koylon.
Forget it. It's because you have seen him. It's because you have seen him. I'm saying before you had seen
him. Maybe not for that amount.
Is a way that I'm coming to you. This is what I asked everybody. I said yes or no. If you had the money, you did not, you were just buying, they told you, this is, they bring his stats before you, all of that, and they said to you, 80 million for this guy, yes or no, would you have bought him? You mean?
My first thought is no, but I need to know who else would have was available in the market. That's my issue.
Yeah, but your first thought would have been no, right?
No, because of who he was at that point.
Exactly.
It was an unknown.
Yeah, exactly. I understand. Hold that thought, Jomi. Is it yes or no? Don't come and give me a long story. Yes or no? Would you have bought him?
How?
Bought him, yes.
No, 100%. No, not Watkins. Would you have bought Hoyland?
Hoyland. Yes, 100%. Yes.
Okay, you have bought Hoyland. Okay, fantastic. Vic, would you have bought Hoyland?
Yes. 100%.
Excellent. Now, this is
what I said. This is what I said. This is what I said on 24th
is July. Yes or no?
I'm just giving a point to but this is what where I'm coming from. This is what I said on 24th July last year, before we even moved for Hoyland. This is what I said. I said United should stick to the plan and move for Rasmus Hoyland. And that is when we were actually linked with Harry Kane. Mind you, that is when we were actually linked with Harry Kane before even Bayern came in and shooting. I said we should move in and sign Rasmus Hoyland over Harry Kane, not even Ollie Watkins. I'm talking about Harry Kane, one of the best strikers in the world.
No,
that
I,
is
I,
how
I,
much I am yes. confident in the no, guy no, no. and how I love the I, guy. I, so, I 100% the correct decision.
Yes.
100% I would have bought him.
Yeah, I understood you because at the time, when I asked you about it, I remember you were saying that the what you had against the purchase of Kane was that he would probably give you.
If we signed Kane would have been in the same quagmire as any other striker that would have come into this team, this
absolutely
current team
not.
That we have.
Absolutely not.
He would be struggling as well.
They will everybody.
Our team is set up terribly. No.
That guy, Harry Kane will do exactly to that team what Lisandro Martinez does to the defense. Everybody will up their game.
Harry Kane.
I think with Harry Kane. Harry Kane comes with a bit of respect, which I believe he would have commanded when he came. So,
our
attacking players would actually see
this team. We have Ronaldo, who can he's all he's doing where he is. He's just scoring goals. Get him the ball where he needs to be. He will score the goal.
That's the guy that set us back by 2 years. That name you mentioned set us back 2 years.
Doctor.
I think there's someone who mentioned a particular interest in comment.
Ronaldo cannot play the Harry Kane can play.
Harry Kane.
He's about to set up. Forget his age.
If
his age
let me know what
has been a problem for how much they were asking.
Let me know what you think about this deal. Somebody said this.
It's not the problem of our team.
The problem
is not.
Let me know what you think about this view. Somebody said this. Let me know what you think. Somebody saying that he was comparing United signing Kane and United signing Hoyland. That was post Hoyland when he was on that drought. He said when you sign a proven striker like Harry Kane, one of the things that he will do is that he'll come and command respect automatically because of what he has done. And so you didn't have problems with our wide players and offensive players feeding in the ball. Unlike Hoyland, who will have to prove his worth and actually earn his respect. So guys wouldn't actually feed him automatically because he's our center forward. He'll actually have to earn it. And so I actually found that made sense, that that players have to trust him. He wouldn't really earn that automatically compared to when if we signed that, he can hold automatically just earn his respect and guys would actually feed him. So okay. I think that's a huge factor. I don't know what you think about that.
Right. I see the sense in that. I'm going to try and round up. I'm going to ask everybody here now what
okay.
This question is for all of us, so I'll go around the houses. What would rescue this season? What would you think would make you in the summer look back and go, oh, well, it wasn't that bad? And then what would you want for next season? What do you think, what would you like the football club to do for next season? I'll start with you, Yomi.
To end this season on a good note, we need to win the FA Cup and get into the Champions League. Those two things are important. I think for next season, I've talked about structures like
moving space. Wait, Yomi, you see that Champions League matter? When you look at the table and you look at our form, I struggle to see how we're at the moment. At the moment, we are 9 points behind Villa, who are in fourth place.
Well, and one game, don't forget it.
Sorry?
And a game in hand.
No. Oh, yeah, we're a game in hand. Yeah, we have a game in hand on Villa, yes. We have a game in hand on Villa.
Yeah.
We.
It's not 9 points, it's 10 points. That goal difference is a massive point.
Okay, so I carry on. We're that far back on Villa, and we're still going to play Liverpool at home. We're still going to play Arsenal at home. Who else? I'm wondering that, sincerely, if with that, he makes it, we make the Champions League, of course, let him stay for next season. Well, go on.
No, but I think it's doable. I think the way we beat Liverpool can spur the guys. We have 10 games, is doable. So I'm not even ruling that out. Winning the FA Cup, getting into the Champions League is what I would term as success. To go forward, I think we need to fix our defense. We need something in midfield. I can't put my finger on it right now, but I just feel like we need something to get us, you know, into a place where we can move the game forward from the midfield. And if that is swapping my bookie man for somebody else, then that's what it should be. And then up front, we need a forward that teams will fear. We don't have a forward today that anybody is afraid of. And that's why you can see on the league table where we are. 39 goals is horrifying. Mm-hmm. We need a forward people are scared of. And that's what Harry Kane has done for us. Mm. It will be a rental. You probably get him for a good 2 seasons, but he gets you back to where people are scared to play United. Nobody's afraid of us anymore.
Dr. Ange.
First of all, I need Ten Hag, Anthony to be packaged into a ship, container ship. Netherlands, and I need a probe into the transfer because I heard Ten Hag's brother is kind of involved in Rasmus's team. I don't know that the connection there, so I need to know how much was Ten Hag cost, and he needs to pay us back. Then for this season, what can rescue? The table is not, like I said, I'm not, honestly, this season I've hardly, like, really sat down, been excited to watch games because I'm pissed off. I think that's the emotion. I'm not scared or whatever. I'm just pissed off at our team and our gameplay decision. So if I don't know if we're being like overly optimistic, then top four, getting to the Champions League. Well, I don't see that happening. Hopefully we can win the FA Cup, put up some fights. Just we're in the semi-finals, we have Coventry, get into the finals, don't make it a big deal. They beat Wolves, we have to be careful, of course. So Ten Hag, someone talked about respecting or not respecting other teams. He needs to put his best foot forward for that game, get into the finals and play like it means something. Get the FA Cup. If we can get that, that's kind of food over, you know, the emotions of the season. And then obviously midfield. I don't know what we're going to, Anthony, I don't know what we're going to do. How we, in money wise, thank God the Ineos guys are here now. They don't mess about with their money. They're their business guys. So nobody's going to be making any. And then with the FFP as well. So we can't like overspend. So it seems like we will not be changing our team so much. So I don't know what they're going to do. Try to find some good loan deals or whatever. Because none of our players have any selling
value.
Selling power, no value. Rashford, they said, people, I was arguing that 75 million from PSG was an insult, but now, please, PSG bring the money and let's go. I don't know. That's the only way we can make money. We can't sell anybody else. Nobody else is going to bring any money at all whatsoever. So we're really, really stuck. So I don't know. FA Cup, and then we'll see where we can we'll go from there.
Bye.
Okay, so this is very easy for me. The season, as far as I'm concerned, is all done. We're not going to make the top four. That team is too inconsistent for it. They're not going to pull back a 10 point deficit in 10 games. They're not. They've not shown anything about them that can do that. And so I don't expect it. And so that's gone for me. They're probably just going to end up in sixth place at the end of the day. Or if Spurs do their normal thing, they'll become fifth. In the FA Cup, there's a big chance there, but Manchester United can lose to Coventry City. That's how terrible we are. But if they don't, then they can pull off something against Manchester City on a good day for Erik ten Hag. All they have to do is dig in and do it. So for me, if they don't end up with anything, I won't be surprised. If they end up with the FA Cup, it will be fantastic. But the top four, completely out of it.
Right. What would you, very quickly, what would you want for next season?
Next season for me, unfortunately, I am, like I told you, I listen to people, what they say. I've listened to Sir Jim. I'm not overtly optimistic. He's talking about a British core, and the names that have been mentioned to replace Ten Hag makes me dig my heels in that Ten Hag must stay. I don't want to hear about all this De Zerbi and all this Gareth Southgate kind of thing, and not even Graham Potter. I don't want to hear such things. Right. And I don't want to hear about having a British core for the team. It's bullshit at this stage in time. So I'm not sure about what to expect from those guys. Plenty of sound bites, but I'm not sure. They've not done anything to convince anybody anywhere that they're good enough to make a big change.
Is it?
With me, I'm not even bothered about this season. For me, the season is ended.
Frankly, I wish I was near you. I will lamp you with something. How is that?
See, I think why people are expectant of the season. Anything you see take at this stage, you see the Champions League take it. The season is gone. Next season, Ten Hag, Saudi Arabia is there. Varane, Casemiro, the whole shebang. Ship them there. Get money. Get young and energetic midfielder. Young age. Because it's going to be a long fight. We are not going to. I don't think we'll win the league next season. It's not going to be easy. See, we lost someone that when you see Manchester United, you know, when growing up, people actually thought Sir Alex Ferguson won the club. That's who we lost. It's gone. We're not going to win the league next season. But we should be getting there with our assemblage. The teams we are putting together, the character of the squad, the discipline. If we think about changing coaches, every two seasons, or the management changes structure. I like this management because they are not going to be shipping out money to any agent that wants to get their player a good deal, a contract. They will let, so they'll be like, their purse strings is going to be tightened. Just, we should just put our mind that the next 4 years is going to be hard, but we just need a coach, a good coach, not a manager. The club structure, people are going past one man doing the transfers and all that. We just need a good coach that will get us good players.
And let's coach, see how we can coach the players.
Yes.
And can I just say, sorry to interject, I'm really sorry. You said something about us losing Sir Alex, massive, massive, obviously. But if we just, it's not on the same level, but Arsenal lost Wenger after a long time. Have you watched Arsenal playing?
They have not won the league.
They haven't won anything, but at least you watch the football and you enjoy the football you are watching. You enjoy something.
But they didn't win now.
They didn't win something.
They didn't win. Agreed. But we're not winning. We're not playing well. Which one?
We won the FA Cup last year. It's okay.
He also won a cup.
Vic.
Okay, true.
Vic.
Well, yeah, thanks.
Vic.
I really don't expect anything. Probably what I would expect is us to get to the cup final, and maybe if luck is on our side, maybe we can then we can find our way out and win it. But if we get the Champions League, fine. I would be fine. If we don't get it, I wouldn't be mad, because I mean we have lost a lot so far this season to catch up. But if we manage to catch up, I mean I'll be excited. But now going to next season, I really don't care who the coach will be, provided it won't be Southgate. But who the coach is the last of my worries. Southgate is a no. I mean, the guy failed at me the last time I checked. So, I wouldn't care who the coach is at this point. All I care is because even if we get Nagelsmann or whoever we think is the best out there, and we remain with the same personnel, which has very poor technique and the technical levels are very low, and actually our squad has very poor physicality levels. So if we can improve in that aspect, and probably my preferred bias would be, let's get the two guys from Everton first, Amadou Onana and Jared Brathwaite. If we can start with those at the end of the season in June, I mean, I would be okay. Get another centre back in. Probably I've heard about Jean-Claire Todibo of Nice. I believe if we want him, we'll get him, because I mean, he's basically moving Sir Jim's money to his back pocket. So. get Onana, get Jared Brathwaite, get Todibo, and of course get a new left back. By the way, I believe we need a new left back, because the two we have are pretty much unreliable. So if we can get a new left back in, get two centre backs in, Jared and someone else, and get I've had Olise of Crystal Palace. I think that would be a good guy to Anthony. If we can get Olise, Amadou Onana, Jared Brathwaite, I mean, I believe that would address our physicality and our technical level. So, if we can start with that, if this new regime can start with that, I believe that would be a very good start. Otherwise, if we really don't get a quick one, Vic,
you get in those players, you are preparing us for another 6 or 7 place finish. That's the honest truth.
No, I mean. The reality is, Onana. Let me tell you. There is no difference between Onana and Declan Rice. Absolutely none. They are same quality, same caliber. I mean, if you could have bought Rice at West Ham, I don't see the reason as why you couldn't buy Onana at Everton.
You're correct.
Serious.
What?
You're absolutely correct. That's for me.
Absolutely.
If I was buying one player,
the technical, the passing is the same. But Onana's tackling is insane. Way above Declan Rice.
If I was buying one player,
Onana would address. And he's pretty much comfortable on the ball. He can pass the ball, you know. So you'd address a lot of needs in our team. Olise is a very good right winger. No, he has improved his output this season.
Vic, my problem with Olise is we have Ahmad, so there's no point in going to get Olise, spending money on Olise when we can play Ahmad.
To be honest, I really don't have no hope in Ahmad. I mean, he's a nice guy, yep. Nice little guy, but I don't think he can cut it at United. Frankly speaking,
okay.
I don't think he will cut it out.
I mean, you don't?
I really don't think he will cut it out.
Okay.
Physically, he's not there. He's way too little.
Very lightweight.
If we can get him out there for a pretty good amount and sign Olise to replace him, get Onana, get Jared Brandt-White, and probably Todibo. Those four guys would improve us insanely because they would address the needs our current team cannot manage to address or is struggling with. So, if we can get those guys going to next season, get a new, essentially we need five starting level players: Olise, Onana, Brandt-White, and another right centre back.
Right.
Mason Greenwood. Is he coming back?
No. Not likely.
I don't think he will come back. I don't think. But if he comes back, well, I wouldn't mind. Well, I mean, of course, there is a lot of argument about Greenwood. If he comes, I'm fine. If he goes, well, fine as well. So, but the thing is, we need a right winger. Maybe he can come in as our bench player for center forward. Maybe there is that.
Right.
But if he comes back, fine. If he doesn't, fine. But we really need to address the physicality of this team. I mean, we get pushed away easily. We don't tackle enough. So Onana, for me, and I believe he should be the first guy we go for once the season is closed. As the season closes, that deal should be closed as well.
Mm.
So
I think that's
if we get him, fine. Jared Brandt-White is a hell of center back. I mean, and we would significantly bring the edge down. So if we can get those guys, I would be feeling good. On expectations, we need to close the gap between Arsenal, especially Arsenal and City. So if we can close that gap, we wouldn't be far away. Otherwise, if you bring the coach and you do not address the personnel issues that we currently have, it will be a waste of time and another season will go down the drain.
Bola.
Okay, not bad.
Bola.
Yes, Omeka.
Go ahead. How do you expect this season to end and your hope for the next season?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure what would change the season and make me go on losing the season. You win FA Cup, it doesn't change anything for me. You qualify for the Champions League,
I can even hear you doing your hand.
I can picture you.
The team has scored 39 goals and considered 39. So if
mental.
Match, if you lose the next match, it's almost 30 games into the season. You go negative goals difference. Last season, we considered 43 all through, and I was told De Gea was the reason why the defense was conceding so many goals. Some of these things beat my simple imagination. I reckon my mind is very simple, so I might not understand all this. So, to be honest with you, as far as I'm concerned, the season has been shambles. Makes no difference to me how it ends. Next season, whereas I'm not overtly going Ten Hag must be sacked, but I honestly don't see, even if he's giving £300 million to buy a new team, I'm not sure that he knows what he's doing in the Premier League. And I said the Premier League, so and I've done a million and one things in that, but I'm not sure that he really understands the Premier League. I don't need to have a UEFA A coach license to know that in the Premier League, Casemiro just doesn't have the legs. I mean, they're little things here and there. To be honest with you, but one thing I'm clear about is we need a striker, we need another central midfielder.
Defender.
For me,
and a central defender too.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I honestly don't think it's the defense is that bad. That's just my own view. And even beginning of this season, last season, when a lot of people were lampooning Harry Maguire, I said, well, there's a reason why he doesn't give the same performance for England. So it tells you he's not exactly bad. And it goes back to what Emeka said earlier on. He's 30. He's not suddenly going to become Usain Bolt. So if you really want to play high and run the risk that people are going to put the ball behind your defenders, and the centre-backs need to run with those strikers, you already know that he's not the best of players when it comes to pace. So if you choose to play in a way needing to utilise particular characteristics that you can't develop, either have pace or you don't have pace. It's not something that anyone can develop for you in the gym. You have pace or you don't have pace. It's one of two things. So
okay, so if we stick to Maguire, how do you rate him on the ball? It's terrible. He doesn't have pace. He can't play the ball. He's not comfortable with the ball.
I honestly don't think that he's uncomfortable on the ball.
Okay.
He might not be press resistant in that way, but he's one of the best at taking the ball out into the team. He's one of the best. Either for England, even United when Ole was there, 70 to 75% of our attacks went through the left wing, him and Shaw. And you know, coming to Shaw, that's a player that people don't understand, that every time there's a resurgence, it's because Shaw is in the team.
Available.
Shaw is out of the team, the resurgence goes away. I don't understand how people don't see this thing.
Yeah.
Shaw is so integral to how we play. And when Shaw is played, Rashford looks out of this world, either in England or United.
But Luke Shaw's time is up. He cannot stay fit.
That has only been this season per se. He didn't have this last season. You know, and previously his leg was broken. Not that he wasn't fit. He didn't have this last season. Your man in this case, that is Emeka, because I like to niggle him because he sold Ten Hag to the whole United.
You finally are addressing the elephant in the ring.
Oh yeah, Ten Hag for some reason thought Malasia was on the same level with Shaw. It's my imagination. Really, it is decision making that grates me, Ten Hag. It's the things that he does off the pitch that I think really creates problems for him on the pitch. Well, I don't think Olise is a bad player, but then I think since Ahmad has been fit, if he had been given the same chance that Anthony gets, we would have been singing a new tune. I watched that guy for the whole season in championship and I saw what he did. And I told Emeka will tell you, I said, you know what? We won't give this boy a chance. Because if he gives this boy the same run as the team, Anthony will be gone.
And I told you that he won't.
You're right about that, but that's not a player that will help us to close the gap to Arsenal or Manchester City. If that's what we want to do, that's not a guy.
Lady and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you also.
I actually don't have any problem with our offensive players. I have an issue with our central midfielders and our center back. If we can manage to sort that out, I mean, we can easily close that gap.
Shipton, how does Anthony?
I see what you're saying. Listen, thank you. Thank you also very much for taking out time to be part of this podcast. One name each. Vic has enumerated his names. Bola, if you are signing one player for United, one name, who would that be?
Wow. If I was to do what?
One player.
If you were to sign one player,
for
the club in the summer, who would that be?
In the summer, who would that be?
Bayo, who would it be?
I probably would go Ivan Toni.
Roy Keane.
Okay. Bola,
Did you say from the past?
Wow, that's a big one.
I'll go Tony as well.
You go Tony. Bola says Tony.
Yeah.
By who?
Yeah.
To sign one player.
Just one. One player.
One. Wow.
Yomi?
One player.
You hear me?
One prayer. Declan Rice.
Somebody that's available.
How
now.
Much do you have?
And we have Ineos money now. Let's say. Rodri. Rodri.
Okay. For me, if I was to sign one player, I would sign Onana from Everton.
Onana.
Yes, from Everton. Mm. Anyway, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And that's it for this episode of your Sports Memo podcast. Bayo, thank you. Bola, thank you. Yomi, thank you very much. Doc IJ and Vic, thank you also very much for being a part of this episode of your Sports Memo podcast.
Thank you. Bye, Lord.
Thank
it was
you.
A pleasure. Bye, thank everyone. You. Wonderful.
Bye.
And that's it. Thank you for being a part of this podcast, and I hope you enjoy it. If you did, look down and you see other episodes of the pod. Please share to your wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Please share and retweet on X and post on your social media platforms. My name is Calvin Emekonwuka. And until I come your way for the next episode, peace out.